On this episode of the podcast, I have with me Suresh Martha. He is the head of data-driven innovation and analytics at EMD Serono. We're going to be talking about extending your technical impact. What do I mean? Well, if you're a leader and you find yourself responsible for a new technology that's coming out, you're going to have to still manage the resources on that team. What do you do? How do you manage those resources? And how do you bring those additional capabilities to your stakeholders? Suresh, thanks for coming on to talk about this with us.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. All right. Before we start, EMD Serono, let everyone know what you guys do over there.
Yeah, EMD Serono is like a healthcare business of our parent company called Merck KGaA in Darmstadt, Germany. We operate under EMD Serono in US as well as Canada. We have few therapies in the market to support our patients.
Awesome. All right. So let's dive in. Let's talk about the topic. And really, it's around leadership. And really, it's not only extending your technical impact, but what your team can do, what the company's capabilities are. We're talking about AI. We're talking about machine learning. Obviously, you're responsible for a lot of data and data-driven innovations. And we were talking about how, you know, you could find yourself responsible for certain areas of technology. Maybe you weren't a hands-on leader for. And I think a lot of leaders find themselves managing areas that they weren't once hands-on with. And that's not always easy because you got to fall on those management skills. And sometimes you do want to, you know, bring yourself up to a certain knowledge level and upskill yourself a little bit. Let's talk about that. So you are responsible for new areas. Tell us what capabilities you're responsible for delivering at EMD Serono before we get off into the topic.
So right now I lead three different teams focusing on mostly on data analytics, AI, and ML. I have a commercial dashboarding team who normally develops actionable dashboard for the business users. And then I have the data science team focusing on the AI or ML models, helping out answer business question, and then any kind of ad hoc question that we get. I've been in the space for almost like 19 years. I started within the finance industry and then moved to the healthcare space. Had some time to work in the sports industry as well. But the primary focus has been for me is, how can we use data to answer some of the key business questions? Anywhere I have worked out, that's the primary goal, to use the data and then try to help them answer some of those questions from the data itself.
So when you find yourself, and it might be, you know, it could be, you know, emerging technologies, you could look in your past, but when you find yourself in situations where the team is asked to extend its capabilities, right? And it happens, technology is evolving. When you are in that situation and you're looking to deliver new capabilities, what is the game plan? Maybe as the team as a whole, before we talk about you personally, how you know, you guys even make, it might be, you know, potentially a product you're buying off the shelf, could be, you know, you're implementing new technologies. How do you approach that?
It depends. Like, first of all, we need to evaluate if that new tools or technology actually add any value to what we do today, right? That's the first step in the process. Then understanding is it going to be supplementing our process, or is this an entirely new tools and technology that we have to start from scratch, right? We also have to take into account on the investment that is needed for that tool and technology. At the same time, what's the upskilling needed for the resources? So there are a lot of things that goes into the picture to understand if it's a viable option to move forward or not. So once we pass that, then normally what we do is like, we try to do a POC just to prove the value out of the tool and technology. It could be like a 3 months, or it could be 1 month, or it could be like few weeks POC. Take a business problem, try to solve that using that tools and technology, see if it really adds any value. And if we can prove the value, we can go and request for that investment. Then on the second aspect of it is like, how do we upscale our existing resources, right? That's always been always on top of my mind as well as for the organization. A couple of things that we do today internally is like, we have LinkedIn Learning, we have internal trainings. we encourage, even myself, we go to conferences to learn what the tools are to offer, what are the new things out there in the market. Sometimes I also join some of these closed discussion forums where other leaders from other companies come and talk about what they do. So those are the few things that I myself do, as well as encourage my team just to go and learn what others are doing. So if you find anything valuable, we can bring that back to EMD.
Let me ask you this other question, because I think that that fits. And then there's one aspect that a lot of times we might forget is when you're looking, and this is when you have internal resources, right? So you have resources, you want to help them upskill, and maybe, you know, you're trying to have the team develop those skills. Sometimes you have to hire somebody from the outside that potentially you guys want to bring in to help. And you're interviewing and hiring for a role that you necessarily don't have. In that situation where you are interviewing for a skill that the team doesn't have, obviously you might not know the fundamentals of how that role, you know, on the day-to-day, but obviously as technologists, you know, you can ask the questions. But how hard is it to hire? Let's say a team has never had a ML engineer. No one does ML engineering, but you're looking to hire the first one for a project. Is that a challenge? Is it something you come across? How do you mitigate that?
Yeah, it's definitely, especially for the hiring manager, at that point of time, if I am the hiring manager, I don't understand anything about AI, ML, and how it works behind the scenes. I mean, the best thing I could do is try to understand what they have done in the past and what are the work that actually was valuable for the organization, what is the benefit that the company got from some of the things that they have done. Just trying to understand based on my data and analytics background, try to understand what he or she has done and what value it has brought to the company. It's obviously challenging for me, if I don't know all the technical aspect to validate that. But as far as with my data and analytics mindset, I can definitely ask some questions related to what AI ML does.
As the leader of data, when you're trying to add those capabilities, and obviously you're sitting down with stakeholders, you're talking to them about the capabilities you want to bring to the table. What do you do to prepare yourself for those conversations? Because obviously the last thing you want to do is potentially, you know, overextend what something could do. And we're seeing this a lot with, you know, AI is new to a lot of people. I'm constantly running into leaders that say, I'm reading up, I'm learning new things, I'm testing new things. They're also talking to stakeholders, a lot of C-level interest in it. And all of a sudden it becomes interesting because, you know, you could potentially, mention something as a potential possibility and then realize it would be impossible to deliver. How do you manage that?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I'll break that into two parts. One is if this is entirely new, how I upskill myself, right? For example, in this current role, I was not in this role, but I got this role almost a year and a half before, where I had this data science team that I need to lead, and I never worked on data science, right? One thing I immediately did before posting this is I signed up for a 3 months rigorous training on AI ML with MIT, so that I understand that gave me an opportunity to actually build a model from scratch, right? That was one of the opportunities where I learned what goes into AI ML, what are the intricacies of those, so that I have a better understanding of what it can do, it cannot do from a leader standpoint. Again, I don't need to know every detail of it. As long as I understand the intricacies and can explain that, that's all matters, right? For especially for a leader. That's one thing. Second thing is when we try to sell this, I mean, maybe sell is a bad word here, but try to convince our president or CEO or whoever in the organization, what we normally do is most of the time try to do a small POC, take baby step, prove value, and then expand it out, right? So we start with one small department. Hey, let's take a business case. Where are you struggling? What are you want to do with that? And try to see if AI ML can fit to this business problem. So we start with a small, try to prove value, get that confidence from the stakeholders saying, yeah, exactly. Okay. I think it makes some sense. You explain them fast, take that use case, build something, and then you measure that after you implement. So how did it perform after 3 months or 6 months to show them the value and gain some confidence and go bigger? So that has been the approach for us. And I mean, we're successful in most of this initiative. I agree with you. I mean, if you should not go and make big promises and fall flat on your face.
That should be in your life. But hey, sometimes you're it does come up. And I like the fact that, you know, you've taken it upon yourself, the MIT course, you know, ramping up. Out of curiosity, you've been in a leadership position for a little while. When you go back now and, you know, take some of those, you know, learning courses and get your hands dirty again, how do you feel about that? Because obviously, as you move up into management, you know, progressively, you do less of the technical work and you spend most of your life building on the technical skills and then to give it up. How do you kind of view that balance?
Well, for me, I've been in the like a hands-on or individual contributor for more than 15 years. So I love that. Anytime I get an opportunity to go back and code something, I love that. So that was never been a challenge for me. Recently, I had to build something from scratch using Python language, and I went back, spent some weekends to do it. So I never felt that as a challenge for me. Being on the technical side for 15 years and trying being a hands-on manager, when you move up and up, you get less of those opportunities. But at the same time, the benefit you get with that is like, because you are being a hands-on developer, you understand nitty-gritty of the changes that could happen or that could go into when you are building something new from a technical standpoint. That's where you can at least give your input to your team members saying that, hey, you should not do it this way, you should do it this way, because technically this makes more sense or it's much easier to develop this way. So you have that upper hand when you have that long experience of hands-on coding. But right now, I rely on my team member. They do most of the hands-on coding, but whenever I get an opportunity, I love to go back and do it myself.
Absolutely. Yeah, staying in this vein of managing and trying to extend capabilities, the scenario comes up, and sorry, I guess maybe we're a little bit different podcast episode giving you scenarios to kind of talk through, but I think your background and kind of the dynamic of, you know, being in an emerging space is kind of may lead us down this path. But when you do hire somebody that is bringing you new capabilities, new skills, right? And you need to manage a resource. Obviously, that resource is an expert within their technical area. They're not responsible for delivery further up to an extent. You know, you're communicating. When you're looking to manage that resource and you've hired this person on because, let's say, they are an expert in machine learning engineering and, you know, you needed that on the team, how does that relationship work? And in terms of, you know, their input and obviously the other people on the team that maybe do not have that skill set, and maybe you are, you know, more of an expert in that, you know, area, you might not lean on them as much or whatnot, but that relationship managing a resource that you have less expertise in, how does that work?
Well, I mean, I guess if it's something new that I didn't have any exposure, so I will lean on that new resource that brings that skill set, right? But at the same time, like if we stick to that same example of AI ML, you bring in an AI ML engineer, even though I don't know, let's say I don't know anything about Python coding, I don't know how to build a model, but I know the data, I know the business, right? That's a big thing where I can share that insights to him. Hey, this is how the data is structured. This is how you should use the data. This is what the business is looking at. This is how our business runs. So there's always that 50 to 60% of overlap between knowledge and data, which I still see a value, which can be shared between both these skill sets or both these resources. And then obviously, when it comes to that particular domain of how to build a model, I would definitely lean on that person so that I am playing with on his strengths.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like that partnership. Obviously, we hear a lot about that partnership, and I guess there's a trust component in there, and you have to, you know, you have to partner. Obviously, the 50-60% in your example that you're bringing to the table is equal weight, because if you don't understand the data, you're in a little bit of trouble. So I quite like that a lot. When you are, you know, as you're trying to build out capabilities, especially new capabilities within the data space, and we're trying to build out the roadmap, do you give your team a little bit of R&D time to go, hey guys, we need to test out some of these solutions. We need to spend some time. I mean, you did it on your own. Obviously you're still delivering, but how do you balance that time to go learn and explore some of these new technologies?
Yeah, it's a very good question. Sometimes if you don't have that much of resource, it's a tough spot to be in, trying to find the right amount of balance between allowing the resources to upskill them, allowing them to do something and fail fast, right? But I mean, some of the time we used to do in the past is like we used to have like a Friday session for a few hours where people can come in and try to do new things and or if clarify questions, right? So we try to reserve some of those times, trying to do like user groups or sessions where people can come in and try different stuff. But yeah, I agree. If you don't have like a lot of resources and if you are against a tight timeline on delivering stuff, it's really tough to get that extra hour to push them to do something different.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. You hear that all the time. You know, I think some areas do get that ability to you know, dive in there and really explore those opportunities, and some people a little bit less. In terms of what you're doing and the roadmap that you're building out, and I guess this is maybe, you know, ties back into you know, you've done some of the training, you're trying to, you know, data-driven innovation. When you're building out your roadmap for 2024, AI, I don't know if AI was on your roadmap at the beginning of 2023. For a lot of people, things have accelerated. When you see a technology or an opportunity to incorporate something new, how do you handle that change to your roadmap of what you're hoping to achieve for the year?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing is right now is generative AI. So for 2024, that is a big focus for me and my team to try to see whether it's an existing solution that we can buy in or if this is something that we want to build in-house. So we are still in the exploration phase on that, but we do have a strong vision for 2024 to at least deploy some of the Gen AI solution to make more efficient. Especially we are looking at solution, right now we use Tableau as our commercial dashboarding tool, and we're trying to see, like Tableau is coming up with their Tableau GPT, essential that will allow end users to ask questions so that they get a response back in natural language in terms like what the data tells them. So what that will help us is like some of the low hanging questions that we get, those can be answered on the fly using that technology. So that's definitely something we are working on. There are a few other things that's on our roadmap to explore this year. So that way we can actually free up some of the bandwidth of the resources in doing small requests or creating a dashboard to answer simple questions.
That's exciting. I mean, you know, you don't always have a paradigm shift and you have to work through it. Typically, you're already there and that shift has happened. You're adopting new things and you're not in the middle of testing and learning, which is cool. It sounds like you enjoyed that. I guess final question for you, as you've kind of gone through the, you know, you're going through the process of trying to understand how to implement and you know, whether it's AI, Gen AI, how are you deciding what that first opportunity for the company should be, or where you should potentially, you know, start that pilot for as a use case?
Yeah, one of the things that not me, but a different group is doing as an initiative is trying to collect use cases where we can make an impact, especially trying to understand when it comes to Gen AI, you're trying to automate some of the replicative tasks, right? You're trying to create some, I mean, it's based on content generation, right? Is there any marketing initiative where we can deploy Gen AI and remove some of the repetitive tasks, make it easier or not spend a lot of money with the vendor to do it for us? So there's a group actively working with each business sector to collect like business use cases. And then once those are collected, the same group will brainstorm like what are the ones that are feasible? What could be a potential solution, whether we buy something outside or we build something inside, right? So we're not there yet, but it's still at the early phase. And once we have all the details on the use cases and we decide whether to do it in-house or buy something, then the next step would be like, let's try to deploy, do it small as a pilot and see how successful we are and move forward. One of the challenges, especially on the healthcare space coming to generative AI, is healthcare commercial space, not on the R&D space. R&D space has already been utilizing it for drug discovery and finding molecules that's good for the patient. But when it comes to commercial side, when you're trying to deal with patient data, HCP data, there are a lot of data security concerns, right? And a lot of this Gen AI solution is in the cloud. So the healthcare companies are not still comfortable adopting some of these tools and technology until unless the guardrails have been built into those solutions. So everybody is taking like a baby step right now, including us, to make sure that we are protecting our data, to make sure that we are successful or we're building a solution that is sustainable and successful, not like we are building and then we have to take it down within a year or so. So everybody is cautious that the technology has a lot of potential. Everybody agrees that. Nobody is denying that fact. It has a lot of potential. But at the same time, because there are so many regulations on the healthcare space, companies are taking their own time to evaluate and adopt.
Absolutely. Exciting times, man. That's, healthcare, biopharma, anything in the medical industry, even insurance, industries with a lot of data. Seems like it's a great time to be in the data space because you have a lot of opportunity to create and find some new solutions. So excited for you. If somebody wants to reach out to you to pick your brain on maybe something you mentioned or just industry or being within data, what is a good way of touching base with you, Suresh?
I would say like LinkedIn.
LinkedIn. Okay, cool. We'll put your LinkedIn in the show notes so that people can find you. Again, thanks for coming on. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a good discussion. I loved our discussion. Yeah, anything I can answer, anybody have any question, just ask them to connect me on LinkedIn.
Will do. That's it for the episode. Be back again. Different guests, different topic. Until then, two things. One, I think this is a great area. We don't get a lot of discussion around leadership and what happens when new technologies get introduced. I think a lot of times people just battle through it and figure it out. I think it's good to talk about it. I think this is a great episode. Suresh actually has some great insights in terms of how he's been handling trying to extend data capabilities into AI and ML at his organization. So please share the episode with other people. Also, like, subscribe, leave me a comment, leave me a review, let me know how we're doing on the podcast. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, thank you and goodbye.